Higher Education Committee on May 4th, 2007 will come to order. We have a very short agenda today. We just have two confirmations. We're under our deadline, our confirmation deadline. So let's start with Ms. Hegard, the Director of the Office of Higher Education. And she brought some young people for moral support. Do you want to just introduce them to us?
I would like to. Thank you, Senator Pappas. I'd like to introduce my husband, Gary Findell.
Hi, Gary.
And my daughter, Ellie, and our son, Peter.
Well, hi, Ellie and Peter. How are you?
Hey,
where do you guys go to school? Do you
want
to
sit?
And where do you go, Ellie? Ellie goes to Highland Elementary in St. Paul.
Oh, and do you like it there, Ellie? Why? I remember when you started kindergarten, your mom was so excited. It was such a big day for you. Okay, do you want to just start with some opening comments?
Sure, Senator Pappas, thank you. I'm not really sure how exactly you want me to approach this, but I planned on being pretty brief. But some of you don't know me, and I thought I'd at least give you a little background. I grew up in Minnesota, both my husband and I did, and grew up in the western suburbs on the other side of the river, and attended college out of state in New York State, Skidmore College. After that, I worked in Texas on the Mexican border, basically. I worked for General Mills as a sales rep, selling their product line in places like Laredo and Nueva Laredo, Laredo, and then stores all across kind of that border where I lived in Corpus Christi. And then from there, I went to New York, and I worked in a law firm as a legal assistant. I came home and got my law degree. And then I clerked for a judge in the public defender's office for a little while. Then I caught the Washington bug, and I had an opportunity in 1991 to go work in our Washington, D.C. office. From there, I then went to work for Senator Durenberger on the labor.
Ms. Hegard, you worked in the state's Washington, D.C. office?
Yeah, I worked in our D.C. office for about a year and a half, 91 to 93, I think it was. And then from there, I was hired to work on the labor committee for Senator Durenberger. During his last 2 years of his time in Washington. And that was a really wonderful experience. And then when he retired, I came home and I worked for Governor Carlson. I had a couple different jobs. I worked in the planning agency. I oversaw the Brandel-Weber study, for those of you who might remember that. Then I worked in the Department of Education. Then I also worked in Governor Carlson's office on K-12 issues primarily. And then I met Gary and decided to sort of take a leave of absence. And little did I know, but we had kids right away. So had two children, and then I lobbied a little bit. I lobbied for the chamber for a little while. I lobbied for the private college council for about a little over a year. And then I also had did some lobbying on my own when our kids were very, very young. And then I got a call from Charlie Weaver seeing if I'd be interested in working for the governor. I didn't know the governor. I knew Charlie quite well, but I didn't know the governor well. And was very flattered and decided that I'd take the job. And I actually had to do both healthcare and education. Those were two huge areas. So I did that for about a year or so, and I'd actually been looking to step back to a three-day-a-week job. I've been talking with some folks at the health department about that when the governor asked me to head up this new cabinet agency. I'd been working on the legislation. Senator Pappas had been very helpful to help take the agency to a cabinet agency level. And it was to my surprise that he asked me to take the job. And so I was somewhat reluctant when I was first asked. And then once we talked about it, I realized that it was a great opportunity. And so although I hadn't ever managed an organization before, I got some good advice from management analysis. I asked them to do a study and interview some stakeholders, got some good advice about what changes ought to occur at the agency, and implemented a number of those. I brought in Mark Michikanis from the Senate. I brought in Barb Schlafer from Minsky. We most recently hired Jim Bowie to do our accountability work. And so I just thought I might highlight some of the things that I feel like we've been able to get done. I think the agency, there are a lot of very hardworking, talented people at the agency. There are just about 65 employees, 30 or so of which I think are purely state paid. And then we have some that work for the loan fund, and then some that are funded through our federal Get Ready, Gear Up grant. But I think that what I've been able to do is try to bring some stability to the agency. They've been heavily criticized for their projections on the state grant program. I think having Mark Michikanis there has helped that tremendously. So I think getting ourselves to a place where the projections are more accurate, where there's more transparency so you all understand what's going on, I feel like that's been a positive change. We have a new website that's very user-friendly. We helped when there are higher education initiatives, there's now a place to go for those. We were involved with drafting the Centers of Excellence legislation and then trying to help see that through the legislature. working with Minsky on that and the Department of Economic Development. The Rochester Task Force, we helped provide a staff person for that, Cheryl Mapplethorpe, who heads up our grant programs. She served as a staff person on that committee for a year and did a very, very good job at that. We have a new public awareness campaign. It's probably one of the first times all the systems, public and private, have come together to support public awareness about the importance of higher education. We have an ad that we put together that runs on probably stations you all never watch, the Comedy Channel, and the Cartoon Network, and then some other programs as well. That's running through, I think, the fall. And everybody chipped in some money, $40,000 from each of the systems, and then we chipped in about $100,000. We put together an accountability report with help from you. That was a very collaborative approach. And we were very grateful for the money that we received to put the report together and to continue our work. And I think with that, Madam Chair, I don't know if there's anything else that I haven't covered. I'll just stand for questions.
Ms. Hegard, could you talk a little bit about the work you do on reaching out to the underserved with some federal money and some state money, the Get Ready program, the ICAP program, and then this new public relations campaign? Who is that aimed toward?
The public awareness campaign, that is aimed towards primarily middle school kids, because targeting it to kids in 10th through 12th grade, that's really too late. Our goal is to try to hit the middle school child, 7th, 8th, 9th grade, because at that point in time, the student still has time to be able to figure out what the right curriculum is, what courses they need to take to get ready for college. But by, 10th, 11th grade, it's getting to be too late. So the target audience, and this, again, was a collaborative approach, we decided was those middle school students. In our Get Ready and Gear Up grant, and if there's staff here that can correct me, I think it's shifted over the years. We had an initial grant for, I think it was five years, and then we have a new grant again for $20 million-ish, I think, for an additional 5 years. We have three schools in St. Paul and three in Minneapolis that we're in directly with staff. Those are young people that are hired out of college, basically that work alongside the teacher to help these students get ready. And then we also have curriculum that we provide statewide to teachers and to those who want to work with kids to help them get ready for college. And that has been targeted towards middle school students as well, and some younger kids too. We have summer camps that I think you visited, Center Pappas, that focus on younger students.
And then in terms of the ICAP grants?
The ICAP grants, that's a program that we have in our agency. And basically, there's a state match required. Those are grants that go out to, they're competitive grants, and they go out to public-private partnerships, community organizations that are working to try to raise awareness of college. We've added language this year. We suggested adding language to include retention, because we think exemplary programs that focus also on retaining students in college also deserve some of the grant money.
And what kind of, I know there's a 60-page report that I have that you did, but if you could just give us an idea of what kind of success ratio do we have? Are we evaluating the programs to see how many additional kids are going to college and if they're being successful?
Madam Chair and members, we've built an evaluation component. I've been very strict about that, and the federal government has too. That's a requirement in the Gear Up grant that there be outcomes so that we can show that these kids over time have improved. And in the ICAP grants, my understanding is that there's also an accountability component built in there, because some of these folks are going to want to come back for another grant, and we have to be able to say that they made a difference in order for them to get another grant.
So you got your Gear Up grant from the feds renewed.
Correct.
So they felt like you were doing a good job. And is that like a best practice approach toward getting students interested in college?
Madam Chair, we hope so. I think every state has a different approach. I mean, some grants go to the K-12 agencies, some are collaborative, there are different approaches across the country. But I think the one that we've found, and I guess they feel that we've been successful at it so far, is one that focuses both on the school classroom as well as some general outreach across the state. We can't be in every classroom in the state, but we feel that by trying to get to the greatest poverty level schools, and if we can make a difference there, that may be a model that could be followed.
Questions from members of the committee? Senator Weaver.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Hegard, I know you are very aware and support the need for coordination with the E-12 system. as a stakeholder as well, and wanted to get your thoughts, your vision as to where the P16 Council through the department is going and steps that you would support and perhaps a vision over the next 3 to 5 years.
Madam Chair and Senator Wieger, I've been part of the P16 Council for about 3 years now, and since my appointment, and it shifts, you know, leadership. President Brudnick, Chancellor McCormick, and Commissioner Seeger, and I'll share in the leadership. I think there are 2 year stints that they have, I think. Commissioner Seeger, I know her well, and we've worked together for many years. We started when she was a legislator, and I was a staffer in Governor Carlson's office, so I have a close working relationship with her anyway. But I think P16 has provided some structure for discussing these issues. All of those folks that I've mentioned are part of the P16 Council, the superintendents, folks from the school districts. There's a lot of representation. And then I think what Commissioner Seeger has done is it's been a good forum for discussion in the past, but she's actually had formal work groups formed around issues, and the folks in the group had a voice in deciding what issues to focus on. For example, the group that I headed up was trying to develop a student ID number that would follow a student from K-12 into higher ed. There are a lot of issues around that, and so what we decided was that we would build on the MARS number, and we involved higher education in that process. But I think by having particular work groups focused on critical areas, we'd actually been able to get some things done on this P16 committee. One of the things I think that's good is they finally got some things up on their website about P16. I think people had been hearing about it for a long time. Nobody knew what it was. They couldn't find it on the website. They didn't know when the meetings were. And so all that stuff's now posted on the Department of Ed's website. I know that you have a bill that you've been talking about to talk about possibility of merging the two agencies. You know, I think you could argue that up one side and down the other. I think there are pros and cons probably to doing that. I think the P16 does provide some structure, and you also need to push us to work more closely together. But I feel that I have a good working relationship with her, and that ought to continue. That's a good thing to have us be aligned, you know, when we're talking math. Math professors and math teachers ought to be talking to each other about alignment, for example, and figuring out how to make sure that kids are prepared.
Madam Chair, a follow-up. Ms. Hegard, in addition to the common identifier and tracking and good working relationship, and that's important, you know, is there particular things that you see over the next 3 to 5 years to further integrate activities?
Madam Chair and Senator Wieger, I think that the number is a useful thing. I think there's been some good work done by Carlos Mariani, and he helped head up a working group that focused on getting ready for college, and that's done. That's been a good effort, I think. Another is just the alignment. There's been a group focusing on alignment, as I mentioned, of standards, and I think they focused on math and science, and they've actually pulled, because it's P16, they've had professors and people in the math and science areas and teachers in the math and science areas working directly together, and my understanding is that's been successful so far. Of course, now we have to look at English and some of the other disciplines, but I think in those two areas there's been some progress made. Does that answer your question in part?
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not really a question, but I want to express my appreciation last year when we were trying to get language in the higher ed bill that didn't quite happen about the textbook study. I was very appreciative that your office picked up on that without a legislative mandate and said, we do agree with you that this is important and we will proceed with it, and you coordinated all the meetings and got all the stakeholders together and worked with them throughout the interim and came back with that report for us later on. And, you know, and it's resulting in something now, which could have been just delayed another year, but it fortunately was not, because you picked up the ball and moved with it without the mandate. I appreciate that.
Ms. Seeger.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, we thank you. We did feel that was important. There seemed to be a lot of interest, and it was unfortunate that only, I think, money-related issues were dealt with last year, and there wasn't any policy. So it was our pleasure to do that, and I think that's our job. You know, as a state agency, our job is to serve the public and be useful to them. And so while I wear a political hat, I'm a political appointee, there are a lot of hardworking, talented people at the agency who do a great job, and I think the more responsive we can be and the more sort of neutral and objective in our approach, the better for our stakeholders.
Oh, is that a week bigger?
Oh, thanks, Madam Chair. I appreciate all the information on the website. It's very informative, and especially in reaching out on ways to help finance education. Any thoughts as to what we can do to turn our rating from 49th or 50th to a better rating for affordability? As you work with the executive branch and strategies.
Senator Weaker, what are you talking about, 49, 50th?
In terms of the tuition.
Oh, I see. So that students are paying half the cost of attendance?
Yes.
But, and the state's
cost
only paying
of school,
half?
Part of the mission, as it states here on the motto, is gaining access to higher ed through the affordability aspects, and I know that that's a part of your interest, and just wondering if there's strategies as you look at that issue as well.
Madam Chair and Senator Weaker, I think you're referring to the Measuring Up report. There's a report that's done, I think that's what you're talking about, through the National Center for Public Policy and Higher Education out of San Jose. They do a report every year, and I don't think we were 49. I could be wrong, but I think we got like a C or a D, and everybody else got an F. So we were one of two states that maybe got a D or a C. That's nothing to be proud of, but everybody else did far worse than we did. But that being said, I think we've got some initiatives this year. There's more money for higher education. There's going to be more money in the bill. The level, is a question mark, but there will be more money for higher education. That's a great thing. We also are gaining some money through changes in a bump up in the federal Pell Grant. That creates savings in our own state grant program, so we're able to provide some more state grant revenue to students. Plus, we've proposed some additional revenue, new state money for the grant program. So that's more financial aid for students, and I think you'll see tuition at least level off a bit and hopefully come down with the new revenue that we're putting into the systems. But we do track a lot of that, those affordability issues. Ms. Grimes, with our office in the back, who's our legislative liaison, she can give you more information about that, but we do really try to track that carefully.
Thank you.
I think we'll do maybe one more question. And if no one else has it, I'll ask it. Reciprocity with Wisconsin has been a big challenge for you the last 4 years. What do you see ahead in that area?
Madam Chair and members, we are still in negotiations right now. So I don't know who's in the room, and I would hate to just – I need to be careful about that. But what we've done, for those of you who don't know, is right now the situation with Wisconsin, there's a gap between what the Wisconsin student pays in the University of Minnesota classroom and what the University of Minnesota student pays. The gap is about $1,200 at the Twin Cities campus up to about $2,500 in Morris. And our goal, we've been asked by the university to pursue this for the last 3 years, we've been pursuing it, is to try to close that gap. It's a contract between our state and Wisconsin, just like we have a contract with North Dakota and South Dakota. So we can't just point our finger and say, do it, unless we want the whole agreement to come apart. The agreement's about institutions, but it's also, more importantly, about students and providing them with choices. A lot of our students go to school in Wisconsin. Their students, in turn, come over here to go to school. Our agreement with Wisconsin's different. You pay the tuition that you pay in your home state versus South Dakota and North Dakota. You pay the higher of the two. So that's a difference that we're seeking to change. And we're still in negotiations. We have until about July 1 before we have an absolute date that we can't negotiate any further for the next year, so we're still pushing ahead hard, and we're continuing our discussions with them. And the University of Minnesota and Minsky are involved with those discussions now. Madam Chair.
Oops. Sorry. Does everybody else get that?
But okay. Madam Chair, we're meeting with them now. We're continuing to negotiate. We have until July 1, and now the U of M and Minsky are directly involved when we're speaking with the Wisconsin folks.
And so it's not become a governor-to-governor discussion?
No, Madam Chair, it has. It was a governor-to-governor discussion, but I think while they have a good working relationship, I don't think that's where the work's going to get done.
Yeah.
It's now moved back to the agency level and the institution level, and that's probably where the decisions need to be made. So we'll keep you informed. I feel badly about it.
Senator Sharon.
Would you talk a little more about the implications of that and why, if in the end the student is experiencing the education that this issue is related to how the money comes back to the state or where this money is coming back to the Department of Education rather than coming to the universities itself and how that plays into this discussion.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I'll do my best at this early hour. The money doesn't flow from campus to campus. It's a state-to-state truing up, basically. So there's a formula where you add up, and I think we met with you to go through this in more detail, but there's a lump of money that's calculated for each state, and there's sort of a truing up at the end. And that money goes to the general funds in both states as opposed to the campuses. You know, there have been suggestions that some folks have had that money ought to flow more directly to the institutions or to the campuses. That's something that we'll obviously talk through with Wisconsin during our conversations, but that's not something that we've chosen yet. The problem is that when things shift, you know, or when the payment goes the other way, you may end up with campuses that were getting a flow of money that are no longer getting the money. And I think that could be a complicated situation if we end up having a campus-to-campus or institution system-to-system exchange of the revenue. But that's something we'll talk through with Wisconsin.
Now, your agreement with South Dakota is that the student pays the higher of the two tuitions? Different agreement?
That's been my that's the agreement in South Dakota and North Dakota. And we've had a very, very positive working relationship with North Dakota. South Dakota's been a little bumpier.
Okay, does anybody want to make the motion? Senator Corn?
Madam Chair, I'm ready to make a motion if you're ready. Madam Chair, I would so move that the committee recommend the confirmation of Susan Hegard for Director of the Office of Higher Education.
Is there any more discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Have a good morning at school.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are they going on a field trip?
I think this was the field trip, Madam Chair.
This is the field trip,
this
right.
Thank
you. Take him up to see the horses.
It's windy today.
See you later, Peter. Bye-bye.
Hi. She looks a little sleepy, or is she working at drawing a picture?
She's working.
She wants her voice. She wants her time at the
Somebody
microphone.
Somebody else needs to sit here now.
Do you want to say something in the microphone? No.
Oh, yeah. Is he sure?
She's trying to pick.
Well, see you later, Elle. You can stay here then.
You want to be a senator? You could be a senator too.
Probably make some really good decisions too.
Ellie? Mr. McElroy. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yes.
All right. Madam Chair and members, my name's Dan McElroy, and I'm an appointee by Governor Pawlenty to be a trustee of the Minnesota State College and University Systems. As Ms. Hegard did, let me give you a little background for those of you I may not know, but I have to go back a little differently. My earliest memories in life are at Mankato. It was then called Mankato Teachers College and then Mankato State. My grandfather, Frank McElroy, came to Minnesota in 1934 with two telegrams in his pocket, one for an interview at the Minneapolis school system to be an assistant superintendent and one in Mankato to be president of the college. After visiting at the college, he sent a telegram to the Minneapolis saying he wasn't coming. He liked it in Mankato. So I have very early memories. My grandfather lived on the lower campus in a home that's now a parking lot. Some of my earliest memories are of Dr. Wigley and his wife, Rachel, who's an art teacher, and fingerprinting or painting on their table, sometimes on paper. So I have a long memory of that. I was also a member of advisory committees at Dakota Technical College for about 10 years in their travel management program and distributive education. As a legislator, I was not on the higher ed committee, but I was often on the capital investment committee and on economic development, and learned a great deal about the synergies between workforce development and higher education. As I was began service on the Board of Trustees last summer, and am extremely proud of the system that has been developed and of the exciting mission that we achieve a balance between the goals of higher education to meet the goals of its students and their families, to achieve a broadly well-educated populace, and to meet the workforce needs and the vocational needs of those students and our employers. And I'm proud of the great job that, the Minnesota State College and University system does in, accomplishing that mission. I can imagine that there is can be debate as to whether it's appropriate to have one person be both a commissioner of the department and a trustee. And I have to tell you that the synergies in doing both jobs have been exciting and been really outstanding. One synergy has been that I travel a great deal as part of last year's assignment on innovation and this year's assignment as commissioner of deed. And I've used that as an opportunity to visit about 25 campuses, meet students and professors and see programs, and help to make connections between the programs that I'm involved with, the people I have met, and the goals of the institutions. It's also helped us to better coordinate the work done in workforce service areas and workforce centers with the work done in our higher education systems. And I'm convinced that the benefits of the synergies outweigh any risks of the overlap, but I look forward to asking your questions, answering your questions on those topics. I with that, Madam Chair, I think I'll stop and take your questions, except to say I'm honored to have the opportunity to be considered for this appointment.
Any questions? Mr. McElroy, could you talk? We are concerned about the conflict between, and I've talked to you before about this, as deed commissioner and as on the governing board for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Where is your first responsibility? Where do your loyalties lie? How would you handle a conflict between the agency and the universities?
Madam Chair and members, my first loyalties lie with the citizens and the people of Minnesota. And so far, I have not found a case where there was an overlap. Budget issues, for example, are essentially not an issue. Most of the budget for DEED has a biennial budget of about $2.7 billion, of which $75 million is in the state general fund, generally in programs that are in the base and fairly dedicated. The balance of our funding is also dedicated, but from federal funds and the workforce development fee. I don't anticipate a budget conflict. If there were a conflict, I would, of course, first disclose that I had an occupational or an interest conflict and recuse myself from a decision. In 10 months of service and literally hundreds of issues, that hasn't yet occurred. But conflicts are not all that unusual. We have a number of commissioners who serve on other pension boards and the State Board of Investments and a wide variety of State Board of Investments Advisory Commission and a wide variety of others. And I believe that the synergies are more valuable than the conflict. The potential conflicts are dangerous, but I understand the concern.
I think some of the concern also is that we're seeing in this administration a lot of double duty, and the legislature seems to have some problems with that, as you saw with Mr. Bell. Should Mr. Bell be both the head of the Met Council and on the Board of Regents? And this is kind of a similar situation, maybe not as high profile, but certainly there are enough talented people in the state of Minnesota that the governor could tap into rather than have using kind of the same people again and again and again. And I don't know if that's something you can comment on. It's more my feeling that these are important jobs that take a lot of time and energy, and why ask, a busy person to do twice as much work?
Well, Madam Chair, let me make one comment. There is a difference between the selection mechanism for the Board of Regents, where the selections are made by the legislature sitting in joint convention, and the trustees, where it is an appointment by the governor after subject to confirmation. And there is an old bromide that when you need to get something done, you ask a busy person. But I come back to the synergies and the ability to connect dots and to make connections both personal and programmatic. Yes, there are a lot of great people in Minnesota. There's no shortage of people that we can appoint. Governors make something like 3,000 appointments to different functions. The number of people who hold more than one is relatively limited. They do that. The governor and I have worked together for about 15 years. He has some confidence in my judgment. But ultimately, the decision is one that the Senate has to make. I've had this discussion recently with the governor. We understand the concern. Because we think that workforce development in a competitive 21st century and our ability to meet that balanced need, but with an emphasis on workforce, is so important, he's asked me to go ahead and seek your confirmation. But I understand the concern.
Senator Michelle.
Madam Chair, just, I guess, more a comment on your comment than anything specific to Commissioner McElroy, but you know, I think the appointment makes sense from a couple perspectives. One is this is clearly a smart and talented man. Forgetting his current or even former occupations, this is one of the brightest guys in the building, and we all recognize that. And Dan McElroy's had a wonderful history of working with both sides of the aisle, sometimes with all three sides of the aisle, depending on what year you're looking at. So I think from that standpoint, from a talent and qualification standpoint, he meets the test. And I actually like it from a second perspective, which is not so much double duty, but I actually would see it as coordination. Coordination of a state agency that has a lot to do with workforce development and coordination with a higher education system, which needs to have a lot to do with workforce development. So, you know, I admit there's a discussion to be had here, but I think there's some pretty compelling evidence to support this appointment and confirmation. And I thank you for your service and for staying with us here.
Senator Michelle, with that logic, we could put Commissioner Seagram on the Minsky Board of Trustees because of the coordination with K-12.
You're right.
Senator Clark.
I think kind of to that point, Mr. McElroy, you and I have gotten a chance to work with each other for years, and I'm honored to have gotten to work on a number of things legislatively with you, and hope that we get to continue to do so in whichever capacity you happen to be in. You know I respect you. You know I do think you're a creative individual. Having said that, kind of going back to what Senator Pappas said, you know, this is really supposed to be more of a citizen board, and I was thinking the same kind of thing. Why not Commissioner Seeger, and why not Susan Hegard? Why not legislators? I mean, this really is supposed to be more of a separate board, and I would think it would make some sense for the chancellor perhaps to think about maybe an advisory group to be doing that coordinating function, because of course we'd want to be tapping into those skills. I think it would make a lot of sense to keep building on the roles and the relationships. But in general, I am personally of the opinion that we shouldn't be having people playing those dual roles. I think it was a problem when then Commissioner O'Keefe served as a regent. I thought it was an issue for Mr. Bell. And I do think that we want to make sure we don't even have the appearance of conflict with loyalties. I know that you were talking about the synergy, and that makes a lot of sense. But I also know that you probably better than most people have a pretty good idea about how you, maybe in a former role, may have interacted with the governor in the way he thinks, but that's different than what a trustee would do. And a trustee may say, look, we need to make sure we're going after these resources in a very direct way, and I do think that the roles as part of an administration can end up getting bound up in that separation of those duties. And it's not about you. It's more, for me, about the dual roles. And so I would love to see, personally, there being a stronger connection between both the U and Minsky with the people like you. I know they're tapping into you, but I'd like to see a stronger connection, but more in an advisory role.
And Commissioner McElroy.
Madam Chair, let me make a couple of comments. I understand the concern, for example, about the advocacy role, and I voted for a budget recommendation from the Minsky trustees to the governor and the legislature, knowing that it may not fit consistently with the governor's vision. It was probably dramatically higher than he eventually recommended. I did that in my role as advocate. People who are commissioners don't give up their role as citizens or their role, their ability often to be independent. I fight hard to keep straight the days when I am the governor's advisor, the governor's friend, or an advocate of positions he may not agree with. And I have been blessed with the franchise to do that. And I understand that it is not about me as an individual, but rather about the policy issues. And I understand that completely, and I appreciate the professionalism and civility with which this hearing and our relationship is conducted. I think I come back to the issue that there are we don't appoint principals, we appoint people. And I think I've proved over 25 years of public service that I have the ability to play that role of synergist and of connecting the dots. And because you might elect to confirm me in this position doesn't mean that it would be a precedent. The governor appointed me when I had a little different role, when I was a senior advisor in innovation, and our desire to connect the innovation in the Minsky system and the innovation in the executive branch, I think, was a very good idea. In January of this year, the need to have a commissioner of employment and economic development arose, and he felt I was the best qualified to do that job. I still have an interest in the innovation in both the executive branch and in Minsky, and I've applauded the extent to which Minsky is innovative. Regardless of the outcome of this decision, I'll continue to work closely with Minsky, but I'm excited about continuing as a trustee and would ask for confirmation.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McElroy, I have a couple of questions. The first is still dealing with this issue of conflict, and then the second is, I can't tell you what the second one is because I can't read my own writing. So if it comes up and
the first one.
Oh, shoot, I think it was a good one. So I'll just stick with the first one. Yes, now I got it. The first one is that when I think about conflicts of interest, which you've talked about in terms of your capacity to maintain boundaries about that, and that you would, of course, withdraw yourself from something, that if there was a conflict, that you would do that in relationship to your other position. But having served in public office, I know there's another side to that, and that is the experience of the public's ability to work with me in an elective office or with you in this position, and how their perception of how they see your authorities or your influence in two different positions would impact how they might interact with you, or the forthrightness with which they might be able to feel comfortable dealing with you, either as a trustee or in your position indeed. So that is the other part. That, more than anything, is where I focus and experience concern about this discussion, rather than coming from your end. And so I'd like to hear how you think about that. And then the second question is related also, but you've heard the discussion, the dialogue about the possibility of having an advisory capacity, still a position, but in a non-voting position. And I'd be interested in your reaction to that.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, it's interesting that people who come to me from a variety of issues don't seem very intimidated by the role. I have been meeting with Workforce Service Area directors, for example, or a variety of others that have no problem in coming and talking to me about issues. But some of that may be that they have known me for a long time. The roles don't seem to be intimidating unless the people want to be intimidating, and I never want to be intimidating. I try to answer my phone calls, return my emails, and be as accessible as a little bit busy schedule permits. But I work a lot of hours, and I enjoy doing that. In terms of the discussion of perhaps being appointed as an ex officio member, I'm certainly open to that discussion, but in having a discussion with the governor, he would like to continue with the effort to have me appointed or confirmed as a regular trustee. If it's the judgment of the Senate, we'll deal with that issue. I think we can pursue the synergies and the cooperation between the other workforce service areas and our other economic development issues and the job skills partnership more robustly. If I'm a trustee, than if I'm an advisor, but regardless of what happens here, I will continue to consider myself a friend of Minsky and to work with them as closely as I can. I can be more effective as a trustee.
Mr. McElroy, besides the conflict issue, there's another issue, and that is that there's only 15 members on the Minsky board, which we could enlarge, although I hear there's only 15 chairs at the table. We'd have to buy them a new table. And we've had some issues with the governor about not following the advisory committee's recommendations consistently. I mean, there's always a reason for an exception. We understand that. But I think he's only appointed people from the advisory that come through the process maybe 50% of the time. And also there's the absence of any kind of labor representation on the Minsky board. And that's come through a little bit with my legislation and very strongly from the House. And so we have, you know, it's a good functioning board, should stay at a reasonable size. We have some kind of missing slots on the Minsky board. And we have this person who's kind of playing double duty. So I think that we're getting kind of squeezed here. And I'm really looking for some kind of solution. You know, I don't think there's going to be a motion to not confirm you, Commissioner McElroy, but I do think that we need to still continue to give this some thought. Any other discussion? Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, Commissioner, you're going to have to buy Senator Michelle a drink after that glowing review of your whatever it is you said.
Why don't you join us?
Well, this is why I'm going to ask the question, because my good friend over here has oftentimes pointed to the fact that there's a few campuses out in rural Minnesota that he'd like to close. And we
man, you call for a study and it becomes closure.
And we don't agree with them from rural Minnesota, and so I'm just kind of wondering what your view on rural Minnesota campuses.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I don't agree with him either. I think there are...
Now I'll buy you a drink.
Well, the goal has always been to get as many resources into classrooms as possible. And I applaud the effort to create things like the Northeastern Minnesota Higher Education District that has kept its campuses open but has gone from 45 administrators to 15 and has coordinated programs in areas like nursing and the technical programs and the apprenticeship programs so that they function. They keep campuses across Northeastern Minnesota, but they function as a coordinated institution, and I applaud that. And I think they can do more. Minnesota West Community and Technical College is another example where by having six campuses administered jointly, we've maximized the resources. And I'm convinced that it would be a mistake to take campuses both out of your area and, but maybe even more dramatically, out of little communities like Canby or Pipestone or Laverne. That doesn't mean that we can't think about innovations, and that may be more STEP programs like the one in Anoka, where square footage that we have in Minsky institutions could be utilized for more programs. I'm supportive of moving workforce centers into underutilized campuses where that's appropriate. But the fact that I also wear an economic development hat, Minsky campuses in some cases are a key economic development engine in small communities in rural Minnesota, and I'm not in favor of turning off those engines, Senator.
Finally, Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
What's in the notebook?
What's in the notebook? It's a substitute for a long-lasting memory, and I jot down things I am supposed to do today or things I'm supposed to add to my other lists. And so it's my wife accuses me of it being my brains.
I just thought it was one of those, since this is a college thing, that maybe you...
No, there's no electronics in it. It's a simple, old-fashioned analog record-keeping device, Senator.
Senator Sharon.
Mr. McElroy, I'd like to hear your thoughts, because as on the board, you'd be talking about philosophy and direction. And there's a lot of discussion about the whether or not we need to have a consistency statewide in higher education curriculum so that the curriculums are the same throughout the entire Minsky system.
Similar credits.
Or not just credits, but also content in relationship to an English course or history course so that transfer of credits becomes easier, all of those issues, versus... allowing for a unique character at a different system for how they may want to emphasize a particular degree as opposed to the same degree in another institution within Minsky. And I'd be interested in how you've been involved in that dialogue or your thoughts about that.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon. That dialogue, to be honest, is to some extent just beginning, and it has focused on the issue of transferability and on the issue of the large number of students who take classes at more than one institution. And I'm much more concerned about uniformity of kind of outcomes than uniformity of methods. I would oppose an effort to have standard syllabuses or to dictate textbooks across campuses. I think the effort is more about having credits transfer and having degree requirements be at least compatible. Minsky has benefited from the concept that it is a collection and not a chain, that it is where system is a good thing, where it can reduce administrative costs, where it can share information technology and accounting and HR and research capacities, that it should be a unified system, and where there can be benefits of the unique character of campuses, both at the two-year and four-year level, it has been able to do that. Now, that makes it challenging, a little messy at times, but sometimes it's a creative and constructive tension that I applaud, and I would be opposed to kind of dictating course content from St. Paul.
Commissioner, rural Minnesota lacks the ability to offer it to their high school students challenging or rigorous courses because of the numbers and the money. PSEO is an opportunity for students to do that, but it takes students out of the high school and moves them to the college, which the high schools have to send money, and they lose their best students to the college. It's a problem in keeping a student body that's robust and strong at the high school. College in the schools is another approach where the college brings the professor to the school or trains the high school teacher to teach a college course. Is Minsky involved in college in the schools, and has there been any discussion about expanding that more? I don't know how much it's available in rural Minnesota. I know that we have it in the urban area.
Madam Chair, I've had that discussion at individual institutions. I don't recall it coming up at the board, although a committee on which I do not serve, the Education Policy Committee, may have discussed it in a meeting I didn't attend. I attend most of their meetings. Let me tell you about the discussions I've had with people like Joe Sertich at Northeastern Higher Education District. He sees this as a great opportunity. Rather than using the formal PSEO system because of the financial implications on small school districts, they generally do it as individual contracts with school districts. They do some balance between taking college resources to the high school or bringing high school kids to the college. Depends on distance. They're also looking at using interactive television or online learning as a vehicle, at least for some of these opportunities. And I applaud their creativity. It's particularly important in issues like the ability to offer calculus in high school or in other advanced math programs, or the ability to offer some foreign language programs in smaller school districts. And we, of our 87 counties, we have about 30 counties with less than 20,000 population, in some cases where the population is chronologically gifted and disproportionately so, and we may have 90 students in the 12th grade and 25 students in kindergarten in some districts, and that's a real concern. And for two reasons: one, the ability to maintain a viable school district, but also the workforce and economic development implications for the future. And so Minsky institutions should be a resource to make those high schools more competitive, more viable, more rigorous, so we have a better chance of keeping population there in the future. Complicated issue with population retention, workforce issues, keeping companies if they have good workers, and yet doing it at a rate that's affordable both for the high schools and for the Minsky institutions. But I applaud the individual creativity of people like Joe Sertich in Northeast and Minnesota West in the Worthington, Laverne, Pipestone area. And there are probably others that I haven't talked to about it.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know... I really understand the benefit of tying the workforce development and the higher ed system together, and obviously the House did as they merged their committees under one chair. Granted, we separated them for conference committees, but they saw the connection and the value of doing that, and I do understand the value of bringing those together and having that voice on the board for higher education. So it's always something that's at the forefront for that board. And it isn't necessarily, though, that we would continue this. You happen to be the person who's in that role right now. And I had, for a while, I was thinking that the language and statute actually indicated that the commissioner of deed had to be appointed, but that is not the case. But the governor did choose you and sees a connection and wants that connection made. I'm really in a conflict sort of here, too, that I think what's happening is valuable. You bring a lot of valuable assets to the board. And And I don't even want to lose that for the future in many ways, that we should always have that connection. And so I think that at this point in time, you serve that purpose well. And I like the fact that we can make it, we can have that voice there right now. And I'd like to see it into the future, too, in many ways, always having somebody who is working on workforce development.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, there's been a lot of discussion this morning, and I think a number of concerns have been identified. Certainly, Mr. McElroy brings a great deal of depth and experience to both or either position that he would have opportunity to serve the citizens of Minnesota in. But in light of the conversation this morning, I would move that the confirmation of Dan McElroy to the Minsky Board of Trustees move forward without recommendation.
So that still keeps your opportunities alive, but it really leaves it to the full Senate to decide. Mm-hmm. Our committee is kind of torn about the whole issue. All those in favor of confirming Mr. McElroy, forwarding the name of Mr. McElroy to the full Senate without recommendation for confirmation, say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. Motion prevails. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think this may be our last meeting of the year. Ms. Shively, do you think we're going to meet again? It's up to me. I think we might be a little busy the next month. All right, the meeting's adjourned.